Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and again, we're going to be talking about the Kingdom of God, and we're going to be talking about it in relationship to the topic of the last several weeks, which is the polity of Christ. The polity of Christ. We talked just recently about, the rituals and ceremonies, and of course, we have a page at Preparing You on rituals and ceremonies specifically, and I've expanded that greatly after doing the program and putting together the audios on that. And the rituals and ceremonies of Christ are completely different than the rituals and ceremonies of modern religion. Modern religion, they're full of robes and certain symbolic ritual practices and the such, but Christ was doing almost none of that. He didn't seem to be impressed with that at all. That he was actually feeding the hungry. He was actually healing the sick. He was actually explaining the Logos of God, the Logos of Moses, the Logos of Jesus Christ, the doctrine of Jesus Christ, the Logos being the right reason. That if you don't follow the right reason, if you're not reasonable and disregard creation, disregard the laws of nature, there are consequences, which is the wrath of God. We have a page on most of the Bible is covered at Preparing You for Bible studies. We got lots of them up already. And just moments before this particular program, I was going through Colossians 3. Trying to clarify the different words that are used, how they were used at that particular time, their definitions. And so we have these footnotes added to the footnotes on our page on Colossians 3, and there's a side panel that explains the different verses, at least in the sense of bringing you the information. People talk about we needing critical thinking today. And we've kind of lost our way in this critical thinking, and people have all kinds of ideas that just don't add up and don't make sense. Or they don't understand why we used to have certain traditions in the world. America was big on freedom of speech, but there's a vast area of the world that is not in favor of freedom of speech. A billion Chinese do not have the freedom of speech. And Europe is going very much along that same way and doing so with a great deal of prejudice. In the news just this last week, we heard that Facebook is going to do away with their fact checkers because their fact checkers seem to be so politically biased. It would have been nice if they saw that while they were being politically biased. They seem to only see that now because there seems to be a wave in America going back to freedom of speech. And that's freedom of speech doesn't mean that everything everybody says is correct. As a matter of fact, it guarantees that almost everywhere you look, you will find things that are incorrect, that are false, that are misinformation, which is why there's a social or even political swing or view that we should be examining what does it mean to have critical thinking. And critical thinking requires actual facts and information, but to determine what the facts and information are, that requires critical thinking because somebody's going to give you a fact that isn't necessarily so. Like Mark Twain says, it's not so much that we don't know that gets us into trouble. It's what we know absolutely for sure that just ain't so. And so there's a lot of information out there that is just not so. And so when we look at the Bible, we put it down word for word, right out of the King James. You know, I could look at other translations, and I have, you know, the Geneva Bible, the Wycliffe Bible, and these were attempts by people to translate the Bible into English. And if you were just translating most of the words, would, you know, you'd see one word in Hebrew and another word in Greek and another word in English. And you would just, you know, they would be translated fairly commonly the same way. But in Hebrew, that's almost impossible because almost half the words or more in the Hebrew Bible, they've added additional letters, which adds to the meaning, changes the meaning, changes the syntax. And then, of course, things written in Hebrew at the time of Moses, the Hebrew word had a particular meaning. But later on, with Jeremiah and Ezekiel, that many of those meanings may have slightly changed. What Moses meant stays the same. But you can't necessarily use the words interchangeably because over a period of time, they begin to change their meaning. Less so maybe with Hebrew, because Hebrew is almost a codified language in itself because of the use of the letters. Adding a letter adds to the meaning. Taking away a letter takes away from the meaning. Changing the order of the letters changes the meaning of the word. And that doesn't always come through with the different translations and versions. But even Greek, which is, you know, pretty stable language. We can look at Koine Greek or Greek at a particular time in history, and we can determine what the definitions of them are. In different concordances like theirs, he had a particular opinion as to what words meant. But later on in his life, he thought that he should change some of those definitions. It was too late to do it. But he thought, well, I didn't quite have that one right. But then you come along with the King James Version, and it is a version. It's not a direct translation. You'll have words translated dozens of different ways. Or several different words translated all into the same English word. That can sow confusion. So what we do is we try to show you, you know, with our footnotes and what have you, in our studies on the Bible and have conversations about the history around that Bible and around the text of the author. And we do the same thing in Colossians. I haven't got very far. I'm only up to about verse 6. I have footnotes farther down, but I haven't made any commentaries over on the side panel of Colossians. But last night when we did our X space where people could ask questions and make comments, and we had a particular topic, and the topic last night was FEMA. And of course, there's a Federal Emergency Management Agency, and that's FEMA, and it's come in the news a lot because of North Carolina, now probably because of the fires in California and the way they're being handled. And I'm sure we could be very critical of the way that they're being handled. I know a lot of people that live there are, with the water running out and the shortage of water, and where is the water that they can't even fight the fires, and the fire department budgets have been decreased, and there was very little preparation. I've seen it. I lived in California in some of those same areas. I've been to many times. And the same as we had in the town of Paradise in California, people could have done all kinds of things to prepare for the possibility of a fire. And on the show last night, I gave examples here in Oregon. There are areas of Oregon that are very vulnerable to fires and the danger of fire. And nobody's doing anything about it, or very little. They've done a little bit. But I fought fires for a living. I worked in the woods. I worked in swamps where we fought swamp fires. And I know how if the wind comes, the flames can just take off. The fire can crown out. And there's almost no stopping it. So you want to do things to protect your home. But people aren't doing that. And one of the reasons they're not doing that is they have insurance. They expect the government. They expect the fire department to protect them. And they can do that. But it creates more sloth amongst the people, because they're more and more dependent upon those institutions for their safety or their recovery. And the early Christians didn't have a lot of those governmental institutions to protect them if there was a dearth or a famine or a fire or a volcano or an earthquake, which they all had during the first century after Christ. And Christians had to rely upon one another to deal with these things. And I gave an example last night. In the county where I live, one of the biggest counties, one of the least populated counties, there's not a lot of people in this county, but it's a big area, and it's had numerous fires over the last 50 years that I've lived here. And those fires are a real danger to homes. We had several fires in the, we haven't had too many get away from us lately, but it's because the people created a voluntary fire department to fight rangeland fires. We already had a fire department to fight fires in the town of Paisley. We have a fire department up in Christmas Valley. But the more those departments are put on the tax rolls and supported by taxation, the less efficient they are. And that's just in the observation in this county, because some of the fire departments are entirely voluntary. Some of them are heavily dependent upon volunteerism, but they do, they somehow got it on a tax base at one time. I think that's an error. I think that's an error with healthcare, because we saw the same thing. You know, we were going to build a clinic in North Lake County, and we were going to do it entirely by volunteerism. But somebody said, no, we got to put it on the tax rolls. And that, although they ended up with a clinic, in many ways, it's been a disaster. And a lot of people don't use it, because as soon as you put it on the tax rolls, the critical thinking that comes from the actual use of an institution seems to flutter away or diminish or degenerate, because they're going to get money whether they do a good job or not, because it's on the tax rolls. And so making these changes in society, like I said, our rural fire department has put out hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of fires. We don't have fires getting out of control. They created it. They were already fighting fires. The locals, the farmers, the ranchers were already doing it with their own equipment and putting the fires out and saving homes. Massive fire went through here. We didn't lose a single home. In other places, and then the fire was right up to the homes. We didn't lose them. Well, one thing, people have cut away a lot of the brush around their place. In a few cases, people didn't do that. They were actually out-of-towners who moved into the area and didn't think about it, didn't understand how things work. We had federal firefighters come here from other states, and they were going to save us from everything. And we warned them, fire burns downhill in this valley. And they didn't believe us. And they made no preparations. Day after day, in the evening, the fire would burn downhill because the winds would shift. We know that. We tell them. They didn't believe it because they said that doesn't happen. They never saw it when they went to school. Well, we went to real life. And we almost lost homes when they were here. But when we created the voluntary fire department, we were able to go in we train up our own people, and we get them certified at our own expense, and we went in and we stopped the fires, and we didn't lose any homes. The fires where people didn't clear the brush away properly, sometimes the fire got so intense that we had to step back for a little bit, but we foamed the house just before we did a step back with equipment we put together with voluntary funds. And this is a poor county, and we did it. But you got the wealthiest people in California down there, and they can't protect their homes. They don't know how to do it, because they rely on somebody else is going to do it for them. You know, I mean, that's what I pay taxes for. But they've removed the control away from them. Well, what Christ was doing was moving the control back in the hands of the people. They had welfare. Rome had welfare. Corinth had welfare. The different, you know, the Temple of Diana was part of a welfare system. It was a financial bank, but it was also part of the welfare system in Ephesus. And it actually underwrote the welfare systems all over the Roman Empire, which is very common today in your insurance companies. You have State Farm insurance, and you have this insurance and that insurance. All these insurance companies, they go to insurance companies like St. Paul Insurance Company, and they're underwritten by another insurance company. So the insurance company gets an insurance company. But Christians didn't have that. They had assurance. They took care of one another, and they made a habit of doing it. Somebody sent me a video. Actually, it wasn't a video. It was on a YouTube, but it was just basically a podcast. You didn't get to see the people. And there were two people involved. One was, maybe they were both ex-military, but they were talking about the problems with FEMA and how we need to work together to help one another. We help the people in North Carolina, and then if the problem happens here, they come over and help us here. And of course, that's a good idea, and I've seen that over the year. That's a spirit still around in America. But if you don't create a daily ministration, which the Bible talks about, to take care of the daily needs of the people, you know, when they need health care, that should be all done by charity through a daily ministration through the church. And it used to be in America. That's the way it was done. And it worked pretty good. Housing. Very few people dying on the streets in the cities 150 years ago in America. Even after the war, people were helping one another out. And it was, and that need to do that and the habit of doing that changed America. And this was the battle between Christianity and what later became known as paganism. That's a term kind of coined by Christian, pagan temples, and then the Christian religion, pagan religion, Christian religion. What was the difference between the two? Well, the Christian religion, the early Christian religion, not later on as it began to become corrupt. Somebody brought that up on the call last night, and they were very angry and upset, and we had to mute them several times. And of course, evidently, they hadn't read Colossians 3, verse 8. But now ye also put off all these: anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy communications out of your mouth. And the reason why is because there's consequences for that. If you can't control your anger, you're out of control, you're going to make some stupid mistakes and say some stupid things, and you're not going to have critical thinking because your anger takes over. And Christians knew that, because they had to get along. because they couldn't get any of the social welfare of the government of Rome, of Corinth, of Ephesus. As a matter of fact, they were accused of even robbing the bank at Ephesus because they were creating an alternative system that would carry them through the decline and fall of the Roman Empire. And today we see all over the world the many areas, economies, the moral character of society is beginning to fall apart. And what the Bard people, that was the name of it, I don't have the people's name in front of me. If you're on the network, you can ask me and I can dig it up. But their idea is really good, but if you don't have that daily ministration, take care of the little things in society, interacting on a daily basis, or at least a weekly basis with others, sacrificing regularly for the needs of others. If you're not, and you're not creating a network that is efficient at doing that, which Christ commanded that we do. One of the few places he commanded his disciples to do anything was to create that network of tens. 10 families get together, then 10 of those groups get together, then 10 of those groups get together, and they networked across the entire Roman Empire. This is how Paul knew where to go. Barnabas knew where to go. Barnabas knew all about this. He had been a Levite, and that's how they were organized, because it's effective, it's efficient. But they had to do it on a daily basis, just for widows and orphans. And if they would do it for the widows and orphans and the needy of society, they will be ready for the big disasters. If they don't, if they just wait for the big disaster, they still may help one another out. But if the disaster gets too big, they're not going to be efficient at it. And the early Christians were efficient at it. But the rest of the world had their own system, but it depended on forced offerings. John the Baptist wouldn't, Christ wouldn't, Paul wouldn't, Barnabas wouldn't. But the rest of the world used the government to force the offerings, the sacrifices of the people, the Corban of the people, that's the word for sacrifice, and that makes the word of God to none effect and will bring the consequences. And that's what Paul also says just before that about, you know, filthy communications. He says, he's talking about covetousness, which is idolatry. You see, that's what the pagan temples were. The pagan temples were funded by tax dollars, but the Christians were funded by charity alone. If you're not taking care of the needy of your congregation, your church, your community, through volunteerism, through free will offerings, it will not be long before you're not free anymore. And that somebody who exercises authority is also exercising control. Now, in the kingdom of God, there's freedom of speech. You get to speak if you see something you think needs attending to. But you need to attend to it through volunteerism. Because if you're not doing it through volunteerism, the only alternative is to do it through force or not do it at all. And that's what we're going to see, is that Christ had a polity on this and he was extremely political. But we'll do that when we come back to Keys of the Kingdom. So welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. So the question is, was Christ and Christianity political? A lot of people say, oh no, Jesus wasn't interested in politics. Well, he was running for king. that's why they called him Christ, because he was the Messiah, the Messiah, the anointed, and that's what they did with their kings. So yeah, it was political. I mean, he started out saying to the Pharisees, I'm going to take the kingdom away from you, and I'm going to appoint it to another. That's pretty darn political. You're going to take the kingdom away from them. He knew they sat in the seat of Moses, but he was going to take the kingdom away from them, the government, away from the Pharisees and the Sadducees and even the Zealots. and he's going to appoint it to somebody else, some of whom might have been Pharisees, Sadducees, and Zealots. Some. Probably more of them were Essenes than that. But some of them might have been totally disillusioned with what was modern religion back then, because it was full of rituals. But the means and method of religion, and religion, of course, we know from the Bible, is how you take care of those needy of society. You know, how to be the good Samaritan who takes care of the needy of society. Because that's where everybody went to get their free bread. They went to the temples, you know, in Rome or in Carthage or in Corinth or Ephesus. They went to the temple. And even if they had other places in town that had bread distribution, that bread was provided through the temples, all the way back to Sumer. I mean, the goddess, turtle dove goddess of Sumer, took care of the welfare of society. It was also in charge of weights and measures, because that's how you took care of the welfare of society. You measured grain coming in and grain going out. But the daily ministration, which we see right away in Acts, of rightly dividing the bread from house to house, that was a distribution of actually what people needed to survive when there were shortages, scarcities, you know, famines. Like I said, the word in the Greek for famine is the same word they also translate into dearth, which we see in the New Testament. But dearth was a shortage of food. Now, it might be because there was a bad harvest. It might be because there just wasn't enough grain shipped to a particular area that didn't grow its own grain. It might be because of some sort of economic collapse. It could be because of weather changes, because there were a lot of weather. Climate change was a real thing back there in the days of Rome. And shortages of grain is what helped the Caesars eventually gain power, because they controlled the food. They want to control the food. They controlled the water and their aqueducts. And that, you know, like if your city depended upon an aqueduct and Rome surrounded your city, they could cut off your water. We see mention of something like that. They had a fortress at the beginning of a particular spring. Jesus makes mention of this. He mentions just the name. He doesn't tell you about the fortress there and the details of when it was overcome by Romans. But the reason the little fortress, it was a tower fortress, was there was to protect the head of the spring so that the water could get to the city. So, because water is important, food is important. And evidently, somebody cut off the water in California, and that some of the communities couldn't defend themselves against the flames. But some of that, again, and that was kind of the topic, we have a page on FEMA at preparingyou.com. Just look up FEMA, FEMA. Why are we talking about FEMA? Well, we're talking about the Faith Emergency Ministry Auxiliary, which is what every congregation of the early church was. It was a part of that Faith Emergency Ministry Auxiliary, which is why we see Paul taking grain and supplies out to different areas. It wasn't just preaching. It was helping them rightly divide the bread from house to house. Why we see Peter saying to pick 7 men, even 8, so that they could tend to the daily ministration of the Greeks, which were way north of where they were at. Why'd they say that? Well, in the Old Testament, it tells you to pick 7 men, because you know not what calamities may come. Because even way back then, when they were gathering in the tens, hundreds, and thousands, they were the FEMA of Israel, the Faith Emergency Ministry Auxiliary. And I'm just paraphrasing off of the words FEMA of, you know, the federal government. But the difference between the two, one is all voluntarism and charity, which is another word for love, and the other one is force, which often brings fealty and is not a system of faith. It may be a system of allegiance, but it's not a system of faith. Christ was teaching a system of faith. So to answer the question, was Christ and Christianity political? Absolutely. And we saw when we were studying the Polity 8, which asks what's the objective of the church, and understanding the objective of the church means we have to understand the objective of Christ. What did Christ come to do? Set the captive free. What? How is he going to set the captive free? What means was he going to do this with? And of course, we've explained exactly how he was doing that. But he did it not just for Israel, but so that the whole world might be saved. Because the whole world was moving into systems of forced femas. You know, where the forced offerings of the people are going to take care of the needy of society in the time of disaster. But Christ and Moses said, no, if you want to be saved and be free, you had to do it through free will offerings. And if you make a habit of doing it through force, you know, you develop an appetite for benefits and the habit of doing it at the expense of others and depending for your livelihood on the property of others, you're going to degenerate. And that's what's happened in Hollywood and some of the places where these fires are. You know, the people have degenerated, some more than others, but they don't even know enough to clear the brush away from their house. I mean, these rich people, they could easily, you could easily get fireproof tarps and have them thrown over your house. You have them stored there. I mean, it'd be cheaper than insurance. You know, triple layer of these fire-resistant tarps and throw them over and their houses wouldn't catch on fire. They could have seen to the water supply. They could know all the firemen personally. That's why when Benjamin Franklin created a fire department, that's the way he did it. And of course, this is why Christ made the people sit down and organize themselves in groups of 10. So they would know everybody in their congregation. And then those congregations of 10 gathered in groups of 100 with 10 congregations. And they would know a quarter of the people, or maybe even some of them know, there would be somebody who would know everybody in all these different groups through, you know, kind of like the old Kevin Bacon deal, you know, where you connect, well, I don't know anybody in that group, but I know Bill, he knows people in that group because he's been there and his daughter is married to one of the people in that group. So you had this communication network. So they knew who really needed help and who didn't, and they were able to redistribute their resources, but through charity, through voluntarism. And again, when we go back to our definition on polity, when you have a polity, which is a group based on maybe a written polity, what the identity of that group is confirmed by the fact that they're able to move the resources of that group where it's needed. If you're only going to have these groups of 10 when there's a big disaster, you're not going to be able to be as efficient. But if you have those groups of 10 for everything, for your Social Security, for your welfare, for your, you know, for, you know, if somebody has Alzheimer's, there's all kinds of things that you can do for people who have a lot of these physical difficulties. America is one of the most unhealthy countries in the world today. Its life expectancy is dropping. Its quality of living is dropping as far as health is concerned. It's because, and I see it, I know people. Every time they get a cold, they run to the doctor because they're on organ medical. the government's going to pay for it. And they take all these medications that are coming down through the pharmaceutical industry that aren't always good for you. They can make you sick. But they're so addicted to a system that is guaranteeing these payments, although they won't continue to guarantee those payments, that they're addicted to the systems. And Christ was breaking that addiction. Moses broke that addiction. The people were addicted to the free benefits of Pharaoh, just like people are addicted to the benefits of the federal government and their state governments. But the more they wean themselves off of that dependence, the more they're going to not only be able to provide for the needs in a national disaster or local disaster, but the healthier their whole society will be at every aspect of that society. So, and it's about social relationships, which is what we covered in Article 8. The objective required, you know, that the polity of Jesus can be understood as a framework, the tens, hundreds, and thousands, a form, in other words, the connections are based on faith, hope, and charity. The means and the method are faith, hope, and charity, not force, not compulsion. But Jesus' actions were often political because politics is what provided the social welfare of that society at that particular time. It wasn't always that way in Rome, but it had become that way in Rome and become that way in most of the Roman Empire. But John the Baptist was doing something different. Jesus was doing the same. Paul would be doing the same. But they give us that the institutions have to be based on voluntarism and where you're taking care of the needy without exercising authority, but also social relations, which we find in the definition. And those social relations are the social bonds. And we have an article up on social bonds, in which I wrote after Dr. Malone said that America is sick and needs to restore the social bonds of society. And those social bonds have to be on a daily basis in order to be ready for the real disasters yet to come. These glimpses in North Carolina and California are just, they're just the tip of the iceberg of what could come in the future. But I don't want people to come together because they're afraid, but because they understand that it is absolutely necessary to come together in this fervent charity in order to maintain a pure republic. A pure republic is not an indirect democracy where 51% of the people can vote the money out of the pocket of their neighbor to take care of what they want for free. That's not a republic anymore. That's a democracy. It may be an indirect democracy, but that's a democracy. A republic, what's in your pocket is yours. What you produce is yours. Every man is returned to his possessions, including his labor. He's not in the bondage of Egypt where 20% of his labor or 30 or 40 or 50 or 60 or 70% of his labor belongs to somebody else who can take it from him. That's not a republic. That does not exist. If that's what you have, whatever country you're in, that's not a republic. That's some form of democratic socialism. And in some places, not even democratic. It's just socialism, which we usually start calling communism pretty quick after it gets to a certain point. But if you want to be free, you have to go back the other way. You have to wean off of the sugar of social welfare that has made you fat and lazy and slothful. Because, you know, the Bible tells us the slothful shall be under tribute, which is a political thing. that's because the Bible is mostly about government. And if you don't have the religion of Christ, you'll end up with the religion of Mao Zedong, or the religion of Karl Marx, or the religion of some, you know, Bernie Sanders. Socialism is the religion you get when you have no religion. If you're not going to take care of one another through faith, hope, and charity, then some other means will be designed and implemented. And you won't have the strength to stop it or to change it. So this is what Christ was doing, was he was setting up a system of social welfare based on the perfect law of liberty. Of course, that would need some sort of form of courts, but it won't look like the courts that most people are used to. They won't be able to create phony charges and use the courts as a political institution, because the people, they would be the people's courts. And that's what we used to have in America. We haven't had that since about 1910 at least. And we've gotten farther and farther away from it. It didn't happen overnight. None of these things happened overnight. There's a whole history of it. But people don't know that history. And so they're very confused as to what's going on. And they say, we have to get back to American values. Well, yeah, they do, but which values are those? What time in America are we going to get back to? You have to get all the way back. When all the schools, all the hospitals, all the mental institutions and medical institutions and institutions of society were based on free will offerings. Now, will you have abuse? Yeah, you could. But you also have the means to fix that abuse, to alter that abuse, to alleviate that abuse, because you have freedom of speech. You have freedom of action. What you produce is yours. Now, you can be selfish with what you produce, and many people will be. But everybody eventually needs help. So you realize pretty quick, I need to cultivate care in my children or they won't take care of me. I need to stay husband and wife. We become a team then. Today, probably one of the biggest contributors to divorce is legal charity. Because if it wasn't there, there wouldn't be as much divorces and people would be very careful how they pick their husbands and their wives. And they would have to depend upon one another. Will it be a perfect system? Not until you have perfect people. But the alternative brings disaster. Brings the decline and fall of civilization. And that's where we're going to have to go as we look through Article 9. Which is preaching the good news of the kingdom. Because that's what Christ was doing. He was going to show you all the elements of saving the world. World was, the word was the constitutional orders and systems of government. Because the Constitution actually wasn't too bad a document. There were a lot of things missing from the Constitution that should have been in there. There were some things added in there that were quite a temptation. And we go through that in the books, Contracts, Covenants, and Constitutions, and you can read that separately. But the Constitution of Christ showed you the weakness of the Republic of Rome. A weakness that was already turning the Republic of Rome into an indirect democracy and eventually a totalitarian dictatorship. And it is at the, if you actually understood all of the elements of the gospel of the kingdom, you would know the remedy for all the problems we're seeing today in the United States, in Canada. I guess we can even include Greenland, Australia, China. All the problems of these nations, and they're all in trouble one way or another. Unfortunately, they'll probably be fighting one another eventually because of that. Because they're not going to go out without a fight. And they're all decaying from inside, which is what was predicted years before Christ, predicted in the Bible over and over again. And Christ had the remedy. But it's the real Christ. It's not a watered-down Christ. And we're going to look at that today. is what is this article that says preaching the good news of the kingdom, the real kingdom, all the elements of the kingdom, and showing the conflict between the elements of the government of God, where there is another king, one Jesus, and the governments of the world, which were moving into corruption and decay. So we'll just read that article here real quick. The deeds, words, and presence of the ministers and servants of the church should manifest the kingdom of heaven on earth, established by Jesus to receive, preserve, and propagate his doctrines and ordinances. If it doesn't, it's probably not his church. And that's what, you know, James writes a lot about how to tell. Paul writes a lot about how to tell that's not the church. Peter certainly does. Talks about covetous practices. Paul talks about covetous practices. And what's so bad about covetous practices other than the fact that they're idolatry? Well, it is in that little element of society in which something creeps into society so that they might believe a lie. And under that polity, I've got just a few verses here. Isaiah 9:7. Of the increase of his government and peace, there shall be no end. Upon the throne of David and upon his kingdom, to order it and to establish it with judgment and with justice from henceforth, even forever. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will perform this. But if you stray from the formula of Christ, you're not a part of that throne, not a part of that government. You're going to end up being a part of another government, and that will not last forever. That will actually degenerate and decay and collapse and fall. Isaiah 61, verse 1, the Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, because the Lord hath anointed me to preach good tidings unto the meek. He hath sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and the opening of the prison to them that are bound. So these are both Old Testament. The next two verses are Matthew and Luke. And these are just a few. We could actually add all kinds of verses in here, because it's just over and over again it's telling you. And that's what we're going to try to tie together a little bit and show you where one of the biggest spots of decay comes from in society that causes society to collapse. And we'll go through the Tytler fatal sequence again, which we mentioned earlier, and we have a recording up on that already. But I broke it down in this section because if you don't understand where we went wrong, you don't know where to repent and make it right again. And if you don't know where to repent and make it right again, then you're probably not saved. We want you to open up your eyes, open up your hearts, open up your mind, and actually receive the gospel of Christ. And as you go preaching, saying the kingdom of heaven is at hand. But you have to understand what that looks like. It was at hand. It was going to be taken away from the Pharisees, pointed to somebody else who would eventually be called the church, but it's actually the called out. But then, of course, we know there would be counterfeits. There would be, you know, there'd be people following philosophies and ideologies that were doing contrary to Christ and were causing, again, the word of God to be to none effect. And men would not be free anymore. They would go back into bondage, entangled again in the elements of the world, because they didn't really know all the elements of the gospel of the kingdom. They weren't preaching all the elements of the gospel of the kingdom. They neglected an important element, and this opened the door to corruption in their churches, in their communities, in their politics. And then they would go down another road that would lead them to destruction. So in Luke 9:2, it says, "And he sent them to preach the kingdom of God and to heal the sick." And of course, like Malone says, our society is sick. And it needs to renew its social bonds. And that's what the church did. Not just when there's a giant disaster, but in a daily ministration. And we'll talk about that when we return to Keys of the Kingdom after another brief break. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. So we're in this Article 9, and we're supposed to be preaching what? We're supposed to be preaching the kingdom. Well, the kingdom of God is the government of God. It's a way in which the individual can govern himself so that he can remain a free soul under God. Christ did not come to create a church to deliver you back into the bondage of Egypt. He created a church, he appointed a church, and when he took that government away from the Pharisees, who were making the word of God to none effect, who didn't really know Moses, didn't know what Moses was doing, they weren't doing what Moses was doing, they were doing something different. They were actually doing what Nimrod was doing, what Cain was doing, what they were doing in Sodom and Gomorrah. And of course, that's why you see the symptoms of Sodom and Gomorrah in the modern society. Because modern society is doing what Nimrod did. He was a mighty provider instead of the Lord. He was taking care of the needy of society through forced contributions. That's what the Pharisees were doing with the help of Herod and their system of registered Corban. And Christ came along, John the Baptist came along, eventually Paul came along and said, no, we're going to do something different. And I pointed out many times that the Bible, people think it's about religion, but religion is seldom mentioned in the Bible. Now, what religion should be, according to that definition that was floating around 200 years ago in America, religion was the pious performance of all known duties to God and your fellow man. Well, your duty to God is to love your fellow man. Moses said it. Abraham did it. Jesus said it. Jesus quoted Moses. Had to love your neighbor as yourself. Almost the whole law depended on that. And you had to love God. God is a giver of life. He's not a taker of life. Yeah, they talk about the wrath of God, but the wrath of God is the consequences of going against right reason. It is not reasonable to think that you will remain free while you're taking away the liberty of your neighbor. If you've got your hand in your neighbor's pocket, somebody's probably going to have their hand in your pocket. that's just logic. That's really, as you judge, shall you be judged. It's basic. So in the foreword of the Bible, translated by Wycliffe, it says the Bible is for the government of the people, by the people, and for the people. So yes, in that prologue, it's telling you the Bible's about government. And it should be about government for us. That is the nature of the Bible. That telling you how to govern yourself. And of course, so you're preaching the kingdom, you need to know every aspect of the kingdom. If you leave something out, your gospel becomes a lie. That's one of the definitions of a lie, is not the whole truth. If I tell you, you know, it's like, here's all the parts for this puzzle, but I take a couple of pieces out and stick them in my pocket, you're never going to finish the puzzle. You're never going to complete it. I said, I'll give you $1 million if you complete it. But I kept one of the puzzle pieces out. and you didn't get one of those. You got a lot of pieces, and you can work on it, work on it, work on it. But until you have those other pieces that I got in my pocket, you're not going to finish it. That's just the way it is. And so you want to know all the pieces of the puzzle of Christ's kingdom. But, so anyway, I said that we'd talk about Teitler's cycle, which is also called the fatal sequences, or a sequence. And that sequence is really simple. I broke it down at preparing you on our page on polity. From bondage to spiritual faith. And that's, of course, what they did in the bondage of Egypt. They had to go into the bondage of Egypt because they sold their brother into the bondage of Egypt. And see, when you make your neighbor a human resource for what you want for free, you're selling your neighbor into bondage. He's going to work, you know, like when I asked my dad, very precise guy, very legal-minded guy. I said, so who do you work for, Dad? I'm a little kid. And he said, until July 1st, I work for the government. After that, I work for myself. Well, he worked for the government without pay until July 1st. Everything he earned was taken away from him. He was in slavery. That's the bondage of Egypt. Except for him, it was 50% because he was in a 50% tax bracket. And he knew that. And he didn't know what you do about it until I gave him the book Covenants of the Gods. But it was a little late by then. But the reality was is that, that's slavery. All the people, George Washington owned slaves. Jefferson owned slaves. They make a big deal out of that. They don't understand any of the history surrounding that. You don't know how many times Jefferson tried to free his own slaves but couldn't because it was against the law. They don't know how many times he tried to change the law. Not that he wasn't a flawed man. He certainly was. But they don't want to know the facts, which is why they don't have any critical thinking. They don't understand that anybody who is a socialist wants to enslave the hardest workers of society to take care, force them to take care of the, maybe the lazier members of society. It might include those that can't work, but it could very easily and often does include those who won't work. They're going to be taken care of by those who work the hardest. That's slavery, folks. And if you want benefits at the expense of your neighbor, you want to sell your brother, your neighbor, into slavery. Because he's going to have to work for free so that you can have free stuff. So if you want to sell your neighbor into that kind of bondage, you're going to be in bondage. That's just the way it is. So, but the burden of that bondage may cause you to cry out with spiritual faith. And this is what they had to do. They had to take care of one another without the benefits of Pharaoh. And they still had to pay Pharaoh at the same time. And of course, in the early part of Christ's ministry, that was what he said. If you owe it, pay it. But start taking care of one another. Start creating those bonds of a free society, because that's a process. Seeking is a process. Seeking the righteousness of God is a process. So that's the first element. They say bondage to faith. And then from spiritual faith to great courage. Took great courage for the Israelites to walk down that wadi and to cross the Red Sea and to head for freedom. Some of them didn't go. Some of them went another way. We don't know what happened to them. Never heard from them again. Maybe some of them survived. But those who had the courage to go went that way. And then from that great courage came liberty. But of course, with liberty comes responsibility. And with that liberty also came abundance. That's the other part of the cycle. With liberty comes abundance. Free speech brings a free expression of ideas. And the way you fight bad ideas is with better ideas. And the way you would fight bad money is with good money. And the way you fight bad behavior and corruption is with good behavior and uncorruption. And of course, the one person you can do the most about is you. And if you're desiring benefits at the expense of your neighbor, you're corrupt. And you're going to end up with a more corrupt government than even you. That's the way it's going to be. That's the cycle. And that's what they say. With the liberty comes abundance. But with abundance, it says comes selfishness. This is the problem in that cycle. Does selfishness have to come? Doesn't selfishness have to be entertained? Is selfishness a beast you have to feed with more selfishness? Yes, it is. But that's where things start going bad, because selfishness brings complacency, apathy, sloth. And of course, slothful shall be under tribute. You know, the apathy say, let's all have one purse. Let's build us a city like a cauldron, and we be the flesh. And that's how you can bite one another in that cauldron. Because you're in that cauldron. You're alive in that cauldron, and you're biting one another in order to get more benefits, to get your bellies filled. And that's what comes when abundance brings selfishness. And then you have that complacency to apathy and apathy to dependence. And from dependence back into bondage. If you put casts, you know, full leg casts on your right leg and it wasn't broken, you didn't need the cast. You just put the cast on. You left it on for a month. You left it on for 2 months. You left it on for 3 months. When you finally took it off, that leg would be almost useless. The muscles would all be gone. The skin would be pale. The leg would be noticeably thinner than the other leg because you didn't use it. If you go into space where there's supposedly no gravity and you stay there too long, your muscles will start to atrophy. And so if when you get that abundance, you cultivate sloth by allowing selfishness to enter into your society. Your society is doomed. It's going to be downhill from there. So what did Christ say? What did Moses say? You had to have fervent charity. You didn't just take care of one another when there was a great disaster, like the Bard guy was saying on his audio podcast. A lot of good ideas, I'm not criticizing that, but he's missing an element of freedom. He's missing an element of liberty. He is not grasping the gospel of the kingdom. Now, admittedly, he probably wasn't taught it, because ministers aren't taught it in the seminaries, because we're way down past the abundance and selfishness and complacency and apathy and dependence. We've been on that road for 100 years. And from generation to generation, the children are born today in bondage. But before they have sucked at their mother's womb, 20% of their labor already belongs to the government. Maybe 30%, 40% will know when they start working. But they're in debt. And of course, that's what, if you engage in these covetous practices to provide the welfare of your society, you will become human resources, according to Peter, New Testament. But you also curse your children with the same bondage. And of course, that's what happened when they went into the bondage of Egypt. Their children for generations were born in bondage. It wasn't real bad at first because Joseph was in charge of the program. But later on, other pharaohs, through crafts of state, made it the burdens heavier and heavier, and made the taskmasters less forgiving. And so, yeah, it got worse and worse. And they cried out. And eventually God heard them. But what the reason why, because God's not going to hear you if you just cry out. That came up on the program, you know, the X-Space last night. Somebody talking about a pastor who lost his church, and he says, time now to cry. There were still people losing their home, and he's standing there crying. No, it was time to find out why all these houses are burning down and do something about it. But he was more interested in his stuff. He didn't have the spirit of Abraham. Abraham said, you keep this stuff. I want the people to be free. But the modern pastor, he doesn't want the people to be free. He wants the people to tithe to him so that he can have a good retirement. And so that he, you know, that his job is secure. I've seen pastors, good guys. You explain that the fact is that we should not be coveting our neighbor's goods through men who exercise authority, something Jesus said over and over and over again. But most of the people I know who read the Bible can't even bring that verse to mind, those verses to mind, where he said we're not to be that way. See, if you're that way, you're not following Christ. You're probably not born again, and you're probably not saved. As a matter of fact, you might be a worker of iniquity, and Christ is going to say, get ye from me, I know you not. But in order to prevent that fatal sequence to continue from abundance to selfishness, there's nothing wrong with abundance. The rich man came up to Jesus. He gave half of everything he produced, all of his income, the extra, half of it to the poor. And of course, in a nation where your fire department, your police department, your health department are all funded by charity, by the volunteerism of the people, especially fire departments and police departments, it's in the province of the people. The rich man's going to have to keep the people liking them. he's gonna have to give to the people so that they think he's like Mr. Knightley in the story of Emma, who was always concerned about the welfare of the people. Yeah, he was rich, but he used his wealth to help everybody else out and to sustain the people in his community. And everybody wanted to bless him. If the robbers come, the first place they're going to rob is the rich man's house. He knows that. And that's why he's going to have to depend upon the hue and cry. That came up several times during the call last night. And I have an article up on hue and cry at Preparing You. The hue and cry is what kept the rich man's home safe. You know, when there was a chicken thief in the neighborhood, the people would protect him because they knew that his fundamental interest was in the protection of the people and the care of the people and the provision of the people. But if you have a tax-supported police department, well, he doesn't need the poor. As a matter of fact, he's going to use the police to keep the poor out of his neighborhood. All these tent cities, they're not across from Pelosi's home, you know, acreage that she has. They're not setting up tents at her property. It's kind of like when they were flying illegal immigrants into Martha's Vineyard. People said, oh, no, these people have to be somewhere else. So, because you've created that. You created a snobberish rich class because you thought it was a good idea to have, you know, I don't want less police. I don't even want to defund the police. I want the police to become superfluous. I want you to support the police and police the police at the same time. You know, that's what I was saying in a county here that just laid off half their sheriffs, or a large portion of them. I'm not sure of the exact number. I mentioned it in an earlier program because I saw the meeting in which they were discussing that. Because they're financially bankrupt. Well, they don't know how bankrupt they are. But that's an opportunity. That the sheriffs that you have left will now depend upon the people, and the people will become a part of that government of the people, for the people, and by the people, providing the other thing that Jesus said that he was taking the kingdom away from the Pharisees for. Yeah, he was taking it away from them because their Corban, their sacrifice to provide the social welfare of society, was making the word of God to none effect, because it wasn't like the sacrifice that John the Baptist was talking about, which was free will offerings of your coat, of food, of lodging, etc. But it was forced offerings through the civil government. See, Israel, Judea, Jerusalem had become a city of blood, where they had made a cauldron. And to the civil powers, they could bite one another to provide the free bread of Herod instead of the free bread of Christ. They were providing it through the civil government, legal charity, which, you know, Alexis Tocqueville writes about it as he admires America. They were taking care of the needy without legal charity, without taxing anybody. They were doing it through voluntary associations. Mostly through the church. And he even says that. That's what made America great. But what's made America fall now is the false church. And that's one of the problems. And with the guy last night who couldn't seem to control himself. And, you know, I've got the recording up and I had to bleep out and bleep out and bleep out. He wasn't on it for that long. But I left him in there when he was speaking, so that you could see how dangerous anger is, how dangerous that uncurbed mouth is. It's bad. It degenerates you. It's a sign of that degeneration. Now that guy obviously has some conflict in him, and I wish him the best, but the kingdom is a particular way that we should go. And where we go wrong is when we were abundant, like Sodom, in a time of affluence, in a time of abundance. The word affluence there, same word for abundance. They did not strengthen the poor. They weakened the poor with systems of social welfare that destroy the family. Now, we have people visiting the White House on a regular basis. You know, I know they went there several times when Obama was there, and they've been writing for years how to destroy America, how to destroy capitalism. They hate capitalism. They're communists. You know, like the founders of the Federal Reserve, they were communists. They were, some of the chief guys were advocating the Federal Reserve were blatant, out-and-out communists because they hated capitalism. But they were bankers. Yeah. Bankers don't necessarily like capitalism. That's why almost all the banks, if you go down there and you ask for the capital, they're not going to give you capital. They're going to give you notes. And before you get out of the bank, that note's going to be worth less than it was when he handed it to you. Because that's another place where you went wrong. And you would see it, and we could talk about it, and we have talked about it. But until you get the essence where you screwed up the cycle, where you went from abundance to selfishness. In other words, you went from taking care of all the needy of society through free will offerings to forcing the offerings. You say, a lot of people say, well, we're just going to force it from the rich. But no, the mere idea that you should obtain benefits at the expense of others, is the idea that covetous practices are okay. No. Legal charity is in opposition to the kingdom of God. It's in opposition to Christ. Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, public school funded by taxation. Public school's fine. To create schools and make it available to kids who want to come to school and learn, that's a good idea. That's what they used to do in America. That was the way it was done. It wasn't done with tax money. It was done with free will offerings. And that's the way you should do it. And we should have public schools available for those who need it. But it should have local control. But local control means local responsibility. Parents can't just send their kids off on the bus every day and imagine that they're going to be taught history and critical thinking. That was gone a long time ago. I spoke out against it when I was there at the local school. My kids were home taught, but I often worked for the people at the local school to build things, fix things, repair things. And they were bragging about ending history class in school. And I tried to tell them that's a bad idea. And but they wouldn't have it. I thought that we don't need that. We don't need history. We know everything already. What insanity. Of course, the people who were deciding this were educated in schools that were already removing the truth. And of course, we've got articles up on that. You know, the Reese Commission under our educational articles. You know, schools as tools. You can look that up at Preparing You. Back at the turn of the century when they were changing the nature of the courts in America, moving from common law courts to administrative courts, they also were planning to change the way in which Americans viewed history. And your history books were being changed, 1910, 1913, 1918. You don't know it anymore. But we're trying to find the history of Christ. And we'll talk more about the history of Christ and the difference between modern Christians and early Christians when we return to Keys of the Kingdom. So welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. This is so essential to understanding. If you're going to preach the gospel of the kingdom, you have to preach the whole gospel of the kingdom. You can't just preach part of the gospel of the kingdom. You have to, and if you say you love Christ, you have to love the doctrine of Christ, which is a whole doctrine. There's some people complain if I say doctrines of Christ, because there's not a lot of different doctrines of Christ. And to some degree, that is a way to look at it. Because the doctrine of Christ, if you take out bits and pieces of the doctrine of Christ, it's not the doctrine of Christ anymore. It's something less. It's a lie. And if you take out the idea that covetous practices is idolatry, that covetous practices will make you merchandise, human resources, that covetous practices will curse your children with trillions of dollars in debt. If you take that idea, you know, Jesus says, if you love me, you will keep the commandments. One of those commandments is you will not covet what's in your neighbor's pocket. What's in your neighbor's garage? What's in your neighbor's house? What's in your neighbor's bank account? But that has become fundamentally accepted amongst people who call themselves Christians. And it is why all the problems of the world are coming about today. Is because you have believed a lie. That it's okay to take from my neighbor through men who exercise authority. And of course, this will get us into Article 10 of the Polity, which is the prime directive, that you are to take care of one another through charity, not through force. Until John the Baptist, everybody was trying to do it by force. But John the Baptist said, no, you only do it by charity. absolutely essential in the gospel. If you're going to seek the kingdom, you're going to seek a way of taking care of all of the needy of society through charity, which is another word for love. And if you're not preaching that, you're not preaching the gospel of the kingdom. If you're preaching, you just believe in Jesus and you're saved, I have to ask, what Jesus do you believe in? Because the Jesus that I believe in said that you're not to covet your neighbor's goods, that you're to keep the commandments, that you are not to take a bite out of one another, that you're not to go to men who exercise authority one over the other. You're not to go to the fathers of the earth. And of course, we've explained in articles, who are the fathers of the earth? It was those men who called themselves benefactors but exercised authority, who forced the contributions of one class of citizen, maybe foreigners, maybe people live in your own street, to provide for others. Now, I mean, it's nice. You say, well, it's for a good cause, but it's foolishness. It will destroy you, and it will destroy your government. It will destroy your economy. It will destroy your children. It will curse your children. But people have decided to go that way. So I ask the question, was Christ political? Abraham, Moses, and Jesus the Christ taught one form of government called the kingdom of God, which set the captive free, returning every man to his possessions and to his family, and does not give you license to reach into your neighbor's pocket or your neighbor's family and take stuff away from him so that you can have stuff for free. There is no provision in the gospel of the kingdom to do that, because the kingdom is a pure republic. You're free from things public. Now, you can't steal from your neighbor. You can't murder your neighbor. You can't bear false witness or defraud your neighbor. But it'll be up to your other neighbors to make sure that you do that. You can't create a professional police department and a professional court to guarantee that everybody's going to be safe. You can't do that. Especially one that, you know, when I say professional, I mean one that's paid by taking away from your neighbor. Now, how many sheriffs do you need in a county? In this county, I don't know what we have, 11, 12 sheriffs and deputies. You know what, we got to have 24 hours a day, etc. Well, no, you don't. If you're already, of all the people in this county who say they're Christians, organized in the tens, hundreds, and thousands, if somebody was doing something that was endangering their neighbor against one of those laws, you know, of you might kill your neighbor, you know, like driving down the road at 90 miles an hour or going over and stealing from your neighbor or sabotaging your neighbor's, you know, cutting his fences or something like that, or starting a fire that endangers his neighbor. I mean, this is why in the statutes of Moses, there were no building codes where if you didn't put a balcony around your rooftop and invited a bunch of people up for a party and somebody fell off the roof, that Moses knew, the people of Israel knew, that's stupid. You're going to be up there at dark in the night with people that might be drinking some wine, getting tired, sleepy, and there's no railing around your balcony? And people could just fall off the edge of the building? You're creating a hazard. And that's what all the other statutes were about, you know, like if you have a bull that pushes, you know that bull's dangerous. He's tried to gore you, and you let him out where the people are, and he gores somebody. You can be held responsible. If it's a pit bull, and it has already attacked people, or shown aggressive tendency to attack people, And you don't have real control over it. And it attacks somebody, you can be held liable. That's where that comes from, what Moses is saying. But nobody's going to give you a ticket because you didn't build a balcony railing around your rooftop. Nobody's going to fine you. You're not going to have to pay for an inspector. Your neighbor's the inspector. He's going to say, well, yeah, you're creating a hazard here. And, you know, and he's going to take it to your neighbors. He's creating a hazard here. Well, how do you enforce that? Do we fine him? No, but if he only had you as a neighbor to depend upon for his social welfare, and all your neighbors agreed that he was creating a hazard, they could all go to him and say, look, this is dangerous when you burn like this, or when you create, you know, you build too close to your property line, and if your house catches on fire, you're going to burn down your neighbor's house. You know, it's common sense. You know, but he says, well, I don't care what you guys say. Okay, but you don't have any social welfare. But see, that's where the selfishness came in. You already created a social welfare. He's going to get his Social Security check no matter what a jerk he is. He says, well, I paid in. But what you pay in today is to take care of the people today. It's not an investment. It's a Corvey system of statutory bondage. Because you are applying for the benefit, they could take your labor away from you. And as a matter of fact, according to the rules, and we explain this on our page on Social Security, go find out what Social Security is. There is no trust fund. It's not an investment. They can keep collecting it from you and give you absolutely no benefits whatsoever. That's in the law. Of course, you didn't read the law. Why? Because you're slothful. But it's why you went under tribute. So, yeah, the government of God is extremely political. And Jesus was extremely political because the power of the government of Rome came from the fact that the people were dependent upon Rome for their social welfare, their free grain, their free bread. So Jesus said he was going to take the kingdom away from the Pharisees who sat in the seat of Moses. That was a political statement. And it was accomplished, but not like most government, not by force. He didn't have to insurrect and overthrow them. He made them so angry by speaking the truth that they said they had no king but Caesar. They gave up the kingdom. When they said that, right in Jewish law, that even their dependence upon Rome for protection got them into trouble. But now, they were out. The kingdom, now there was a void. There was nobody in charge of the kingdom of God, except for Jesus. And he appointed it to somebody else. That's the way it works. And see, last night, certain people didn't understand that. Well, one guy didn't understand that. He didn't understand what Jesus was really doing. Showing people how to be a government of the people, for the people, and by the people, without using force over their neighbor, or engaging in covetous practices, or sloth, because sloth wasn't going to cut it. They had to take care of the widows and orphans and needy of society so that they would be a viable and strong community with social bonds that don't break in hard times. And that's what Malone, I don't know if he's ever heard the gospel, but he knows that our social bonds are gone. But this is what you need. It will awaken you. It will take the scales off your eyes. And I see elements of the kingdom, what I call kingdom tracks in these people. So many people are homeschooling now, kingdom track. So many people are taking back their responsibility for their health and trying to spread that information to other people. What, you know, this food they're selling us in the store is poison. But what one of the things they haven't done yet is there still a scattered flock. And that's why Christ, the only command that Christ made to his disciples, where he actually used a word that means commanded, was to command that they make the people sit down in the tens, hundreds, and thousands, organize themselves so that they're not a scattered flock. And I've told you stories. I'd be out with the sheep out on the desert, thousands of acres of, you know, sagebrush and grasses out there on the desert. And there the sheep are. At times when they're really in a dangerous area, they will graze in a single line, shoulder to shoulder, hundreds of sheep all the way across the desert. And they will just, heads down, grazing, moving across the desert, shoulder to shoulder to shoulder, almost touching, sometimes touching each other's shoulder. I didn't make them do that. Nature made them do that. But even when they're out in the field and they're fairly safe, not out in the sagebrush. See, in the sagebrush, coyotes, bobcats can sneak up on you. But out in the open field, it's not so easy. So the animals look a little more scattered out. If you look out there, you'll see them in groups. They will be aware of four, five, six other sheep near them as they're grazing. They'll sort of have them out of the corner of their eye. They will be looking at them. If one of them gets startled, they all get startled and they all come together. Farm flocks who sat inside the fence for years and years and years, they don't do that. They might kind of come together, but it's really easy for a coyote to run across their back or charge them from one, and they will scatter because they're more interested in saving themselves than the herd. The range sheep, the herd, is their life. And that's what Christ was teaching the people, that you had to care about your neighbor as much as you cared about yourself. You had to care about your neighbor's children as much as you cared about yourself. You had to care about your neighbor's widow as much as you care about yourself. And if you don't do that, you won't be ready for the big cataclysms and catastrophes that are going to happen. And there's a lot of other things you can do, and we talk about that in other places. But, you know, in Numbers 11:6, it says, "And the Lord said unto Moses, gather unto me 70 men, the elders of Israel, whom thou knowest to be the elders of the people, and officers over them, and bring them unto the tabernacle." Now, that word officers over them, that we could look at that, but that's not what we're going to get into right now. "But bring them to the tabernacle of the congregation, that they may stand there with thee." This was his legislature, except they weren't making new laws. They already had the laws. It wouldn't be for centuries and centuries before that who was posing as the Sanhedrin started making the laws for the people. But that was long after they had already rejected God and decided to have a central ruler who could force the offerings of the people. And they were told in Samuel 8, you can read it yourself, he was going to take and take and take and take and take and take, and then you're going to cry out, but I'm not even going to hear you. But why? Because you didn't want to be ruled over by God. This is part of the gospel. If you want to tell me that Christ is your king, why are you going to another king and asking for benefits, especially benefits he can only provide you by taking away from your neighbor or cursing your neighbor's children with debt? Because all your benefits today and all your countries today come from debt, borrowing money against the future of your children. They say, oh, we have to have a responsible spending. You're so far away from that. I don't know if you have the will to change, but the fact is the wrath of God is coming. The consequences of going this way, which we should know if we knew history, is inevitable. The unrighteous mammon will fail. But the question is, are you suitable for more righteous habitations? And that's what Christ was showing you, a way in which to govern yourselves without taking away the rights of your neighbor. And that's the only way to restore your rights. And some of the other things that, of course, you know, John the Baptist's father was Zechariah in the government temple. Was literally, he was in, seems to be that one time at least, he was in the Holy of Holies, so he had to be one of the rotating high priests. And he was murdered. And John the Baptist would inherit his office. And he said, the one that's coming after me is Jesus. And then later on, when it looked like Jesus was going to enter Jerusalem as the king, as the Christ, as the highest son of David, John the Baptist sent his, some of his supporters, followers, is Jesus, are you the one? He did not know Jesus was the Messiah. He just knew that he should take his place in the real baptism, not the phony baptism of the phony church that was operating with its dependence upon riding the back of Herod, who was forcing the contributions of the people, which is what the modern church does. It rides the back of government. It doesn't take care of the needy of society. Oh, a little token here, but 90% of all the welfare in these modern churches is taken care of by the government. Early Christians, 100% was taken care of by the church, rightly dividing the bread from house to house, healthcare, everything was taken care of by the church. Even in early America, that's the way it was. Wasn't that way always in Europe? At least at that time. That's why people like Tocqueville was battling with this idea of legal charity in his books, which you can go, we have articles on Alexis Tocqueville, de Tocqueville, at Preparing You, and you can find out more about him and go read some of his books. He wrote several of them and see what he says. But the point is, you're going to end up in this sequence of this cycle of destruction, back into bondage, which you have already done, as soon as you decide to take care of the needy through forced offerings, through men who exercise authority. And the churches that are not preaching against that, they're riding the back of the beast. They're pretending to be the church, but they're, you know, they have turned visiting the widows and orphans into stopping in at the hospital. In America, it used to mean to build the hospital, to actually take them into your homes and provide for the needy of society, like the Good Samaritan. But you don't do that anymore. You say the government's got to do it. The government's got to put out your fires. The government's got to save you from the floods. The government's got to save you from hunger. The government's got to save you from invasion. It's not doing a very good job in any of these things, because you're not doing a very good job of being a Christian and following the ways of Christ. So, you know, the fact that Jesus was called the Son of God, that was political. Yeah, there's a spiritual element to it, absolutely. But Caesar was called the Son of God. And we have an article, go look up Son of God. Find out why Caesar was called the Son of God. Because he could fire the money changers of the temples in Rome. The porters of the temple in Rome, if they were corrupt and taking bribes, he could go in there, Caesar could go in there and fire those priests at the temple of Jupiter. He could do that. Jesus could do that in Jerusalem. So he was called the Son of God, because that everybody knew at that time. Everybody knew at that time who the Son of God was. In Rome, it was Caesar. Now, like I said last night, I mentioned that Nero actually probably had conversations with Paul, certainly had conversations with Paul's half-brother. And probably, you know, some of the other Caesars I know had detailed conversations with people that are mentioned in the New Testament, like Claudia and Linus. But what were they doing? Did they actually, this is why Trajan and Hadrian said, leave the Christians alone. They actually had a respect for what these peculiar people were taking care of all the needy of their society through faith, hope, and charity. And that was to be admired. Even Antoninus Pius, receiving the letters from Justin the Martyr, was impressed with the first letter. But they were already facing bankruptcy themselves. And if too many people became Christians, especially the rich, it was going to eat into their coffers. And their coffers had been vastly depreciated by corruption. So was yours. If you were to start turning around, thinking differently, start going back the other way, start organizing yourselves in the tens, hundreds, and thousands, not to create a militia, although it could turn into that, and somebody will probably accuse you of that. But if they actually see you taking care of the needy of society, and as inflation increases and the bank closures take place or whatever is coming around the corner, if you're not coming together and helping one another, provide for one another in a network of charity, you're not going to have the protection of God. You're gonna experience the wrath of God because you didn't hear his gospel. You heard a form of godliness, but you denied the power thereof, the power that you have to take care of the needy. People don't want to let go of their strong delusions, and we have an article on that. You can go read that. But the money changers, why was casting out the money changers? That's a political event. Those money changers were receiving the tax, and that was part of the heave offering that was coming up to the temple. And the treasuries were going to be overflowing. And he fired the guys that were collecting it, the porters of the temple, which was the power of only the king and the high priest since the days of David. So you don't know these things. You don't know these histories. So you can't put all these pieces of the puzzle together. And if you can't put all the pieces of the puzzle together, you'll never finish the puzzle. So I'm giving you the pieces. Now you have to put those pieces together in your own heart, in your own mind, and start conforming to the polity of Christ. And start, the final thing is attending to the weightier matters, but we'll have to talk about that at another time. And until then, peace on your house, and may God be with you. Join us on the network. Start forming those network groups. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.